They had no use for the God of love. They had completely forgotten the atomic war of 1978. And then, the blow fell. The astronomers had seen, had been looking at a bright red something for years. This something turned out to be a large ball of fire, and as it approached closer to Earth, it was seen to be much larger than Earth, and a good deal hotter. In fact, it turned out to be a ball of atomic energy, but as it had been seen for ages, the world took it for granted. It was said to be just another bright star until the blow fell. The chief astronomer at Montreal saw something new. The ball of fire seemed to be closer. In fact, it appeared to be falling to Earth fast. During the next few days, many other astronomers saw the same thing. Of course, the world at large said funny things about the old men who look at stars, but the ball of fire was getting larger. Any fool could see that. But they had seen these comets before. After all, people were too wise to believe in God. Science said nothing like that could happen in this modern world. Who was fool enough to believe in a God? So at last, when the world astronomers combined their findings and said the ball of fire would hit the Earth very soon, no one believed, except the small handful left of that old group of fools who said they were Christians. Of course, they were a laugh. Finally, after a few months of having fun with the silly Christians, the heat from that ball of fire was felt all over the world. The ice caps at the North and South Poles were melting, causing floods. Shocks were felt, rivers started to dry up, and in a few months no large steamers could pass up the Great St. Lawrence River. The world leaders started to think, well, maybe the Christians had something after all. They appeared to be the only people left on Earth who could still smile. But what was wrong with our boys of science who had told the world that this ball of fire was just a bright light, no danger? There, hot ball of fire drew closer, no one could find a cool spot. Most people had fled to the Arctic, but it was even hot there. There appeared only one thing to do, get off the Earth fast. But how could several billion persons leave? There was not a spaceship to be had, and no time to build one, even if they knew how. But of course, no one believed in spaceships, any more than they believed in God. The end came quickly. Shock after great shock hit the Earth, and there was no place to hide. Even the large caves inside the Earth were destroyed, not one stone standing on another, a great big pile of rubbish. Ruins, ruins. The few Christians were moved to the planet Venus, and returned to Earth many years later, to start a new world, with God. And that, said Frank, is the story of the end of the people of Earth, according to my personal knowledge, and the records cut into these rocks. The records were made by the last people to live, a few months before the world was destroyed. But, I asked, what was this thing seen by the chief astronomer? Frank looked at me with sad eyes. It was the red planet. The people of Earth were completely destroyed by the atomic energy transmitted from this planet when it came within reach. Man, by means of his foolish science, had destroyed himself. You see, my friend, no one can live apart from God forever. God did not destroy them. This is not new, as I have repeated so many times in my message to the Earth people. You never appear to learn by your mistakes. Your great scientists appear to believe they know everything, and because in reality they know nothing, they bring destruction on themselves and all who have faith in them. Science under divine control is good, but without his will, it is evil. With those last words, Frank said good bye. Francis waved her hand and walked into the Great X-12, leaving me alone with my thoughts, and many questions I would like to ask Frank. I then yelled, and found myself within the silver ball, and in a few seconds, Frank opened the door. I stepped out, back again to Christmas Eve 1969. Welcome home, said Frank. Tell us, A11, the news. I told them all I had seen, the ruins, the monster, the giant spaceship, and the story he had told me. Frank and Francis were sad. But, said Frank, is it not true that your world has been warned for generations? The people of Earth are working to destroy themselves by their foolish ways. God made one race of mankind, some red, some black, some of other color, but all one race. Need we tell you that you judge others because their skin is different, or because others have more, or less money, or perhaps their social background is different? It is little wonder you have war and other problems. We still believe the Earth man, in general, to be mentally ill. We have great difficulty of convincing ourselves that sane persons would behave as Earth people do. In our first message we told you of our surprise to see the people of Earth running around like insects, doing little of practical or constructive use, but just living as playboys, for self. Most of you end your lives, sadly, even at this moment your nations plan to murder each other, watching to see who can throw the first atomic bomb, to blast the other, if possible, without getting hurt. You in Canada have the highest standard of living on Earth, and in what manner do you thank God? It would appear from their actions, that the people do not appreciate their lucky position. From what we see, none of the Earth people are satisfied with the good life. World conditions in this age appear to be the same as they were before the Great Flood, when everyone except 8 persons were destroyed. The people of that day were almost the same as the people of Earth today. They were very religious, but worldly, materialistic minded. Note that before the Flood, they had about the same new morality as you have on Earth at this time, and that is the reason for our coming in large numbers. You will note that the people before the Flood were laughing at the few who saw signs, laughing at the silly old man building his flying saucer ark. No one saw the signs. Note today, very few see our spaceships. Yes, the majority laugh, for as Christ said, there are none so blind as those who refuse to see. Only those who believe can see further than their nose, and that is why use or ruins. With these words, Frank ended his talk, and Francis said she would give us a little talk for us to meditate on. I will not say very much, Arthur, she said. We must leave, but we shall return soon, and at that time I will bring you another meditation. Here are a few thoughts about visions. Have you ever considered, my dear Arthur, she said, that God's truest servants have lived by the power and guidance which came to them through their visions, while they looked not at the things which are seen, but at the things which are not seen? To most people, Venusians and your people of Earth, and those of other worlds, glad and happy days come from time to time. Let us remember to keep our eyes and hearts open, to drink in all we can of joy in what we see and hear, during those glad days. It may come true even for us, that God should be with us in our gardens, and that we may learn to know Him better through the things that are made. But, how may we keep this spirit of life and light with us when the days darken, again, and the shadows fall so early? Have we any inner vision, which is not dependent on the various happenings of our lives? What can make us brave and quiet in grievous anxiety? What can steady us when the cloud of depression and sickness comes to us? What can calm us when the deep dark shadow of death falls o'er our homes and takes with it all our joy? What can give us patient wisdom with, and loving interest in, the children, old and young, according to their need? What can inspire us with understanding and love for all creatures? You know the answer, the world knows the answer. Your world trouble is the direct result of your rejection of the simple truth, as taught by Christ. Anticipating this rejection of idealism, of the true idea of God, this salvation from all error, physical and mental, Jesus asked, "When the Son of Man cometh, shall he find faith on the earth?" With these words my Venusian friends bid me goodbye, leaving me with the greatest truth and wonder of my life. I expected wonders. I saw a miracle. Chapter 8. After the Great X, 12 had left Lackport on that cold morning of 1969, Frank sent the following message which I received on the Tesla scope. The people of your world are on the verge of being wiped out by a cataclysm, as the result of the approaching Armageddon, whereby combatants and civilians alike will be blotted from the face of the earth if something is not done to stop the present methods of evil and hate, which appear to be spreading all over the earth, on war and human rights, editor's heading. Only sensible recognition of all national and individual rights of all people, and the right of all people to live in accordance with God's law will avert this cataclysm. The wholesale building of destructive engines of war will not save the world, and is only the method of lunatics who have lost faith in God. It is the right and duty of all sane thinking people to deliberately and definitely think of Him, and peace. All of the people on earth, each one of you, will be responsible for every life lost. It is not so much of what you do, but that which you do not do, for good, as you may read in the third chapter of Revelation. Each one of you will be held responsible if you do not do your utmost to prevent hate, or war. Engines of war, which is murder, are not required to prevent war. 2. If you expect God to help, you must keep His law. If you keep that thought in mind, your problem will be solved. But to have peace, we must have peace in our hearts, for that which we receive is the reflection of our own desire, even if we do not know it. No one can deceive God, because He can see into our hearts. In the past, from that which we see of you, the world has always been ready to blame God, or bad luck, or even to say there is no God because He did not prevent sickness, death, and war, or to save you from the results of your sins. How can you expect Him to help you, when you only pretend to keep His rules or to even say that He did not give you enough strength to keep them? Therefore, the answer to all of your problems is to be honest with yourself. Give up your foolish lust for personal wealth and power. Take a look at your history. Where are all the great people? Where are your warlords? You know the answer. Is there any future for all those dead earth people? Did they take their silly power and false pride with them? Was their lust for power worthwhile? If the millions of people on earth were to wake up and put Christian leaders to govern them, using only the law of God, the results would be peace and happiness for all. According to the sixth commandment, thou shalt not kill. The true meaning of this has been rendered by Christ in His Sermon on the Mount, which you may read in the book of Matthew, chapters 5, 6, 7. Some people tried to make themselves believe they are not guilty of murder, because they have their own personal meaning of the law. Blinding yourself to the truth does not make you one bit less guilty. 3. Entering into, or encouraging of wars, or the envy of others, to hate or to dislike, to control by the force of will, to hunt for sport, to kill anything, to destroy any good desire on the part of anyone, it is all murder. As Christ said, angry and evil passions are the seeds of murder. Cain first envied his brother, and after that he murdered him. The Pharisees first hated Christ, and after that they were the means of his being put to death. Christ our Savior not only did not go about wounding and injuring men, and putting them to death, but he went about befriending them, and doing them good. And we must, according to our opportunity, go and do likewise. Let us all reflect also, that when one thing is forbidden in Scripture, and common sense, the thing contrary to it may be considered a command. In other words, do the positive. Love worketh no ill to his neighbor, therefore love is the fulfilling of the law. Do we then feel a tender concern never to hurt anyone by word or deed? Do all earth people consider it as a part of their business in life to support the weak, to feed the hungry, to clothe the naked, according to each one's ability, and also to comfort them that are afflicted, to heal the wounds which others give, and to all without thought of receiving thanks, and to remember that our own neighbor does not mean just our own kind, our own race, color or country? It is a silly excuse to say we go to war because we must have more territory, for expansion. No country needs expansion. Your earth is supposed to be free to all who wish to live in peace and goodwill. End of message. Chapter 91. Some weeks after receiving the message from Frank, which he sent to me soon after the Great X, 12 had left me on that cold Christmas morning of 1969, I again heard the alarm sound on the telescope. Another message, I thought. Yes, sure enough, it was Frank. This time with a startling suggestion, to use his own words. I wish to suggest that you come with us, on our next trip to the planet Mars. If you agree, we shall come for you sometime around March 9th. End of message. A trip to the planet Mars, the mystery planet, was the life as we know it. On the red planet, Frank did not mention anything about special equipment. No doubt he would supply it if it was required. Of course, I asked myself a lot of questions. Mars was far away. We knew now that man could go into space, because just recently a man had landed and walked on the moon, not so far away from Earth as the red planet. It at least proved the possibility of going to the other planets at some future time, but it will need something far better than a rocket. So during the weeks that passed, I did a great deal of thinking, and managed to make up my mind to accept Frank's invitation. The only things I knew about Mars were all pure theory. No one on Earth could be sure of anything concerning anything outside of our world, and after all, we did not know all, or everything about our own Earth. At last, March 8th came, and with it, my long wait for news from Frank. Perhaps you are wondering what kind of ship we had. No need to wonder, it was the Venus Space Ship X-12. Frank had long ago suggested that we might pay a visit to Mars. March 9th turned out to be an almost perfect of day for take off. I waited for the alarm to sound on the Tesla scope. Again, I had no sleep during the night of March 8th, but at last the alarm sounded at around 2 a.m. I again ran outside, in the hope I might see it landing. But there it was, at the same spot. I walked up to the door where I was welcomed by Frank and his charming companion, Francis. "Welcome, old chap," they said. "This will make history for you," said Frank. "Yes, indeed," I replied. "Mars has always been an interesting subject, but few, if any, Earth people believe there is life, as we know it, on that planet." "Wait until you arrive there," said Frank. In the meantime, the Great X-12 was far above Earth, which now appeared as a beautiful star, from so far away. The X-12 picked up speed. What speed, no Earth man can imagine. Contrary to all Earth science theory, the X-12 at such a speed should have been completely destroyed, for it was moving 27 times the speed of light. At this speed we should reach Mars in about 1 hour, allowing for slow down at the halfway mark, and the landing. It was around 4 a.m. Earth time that we landed on the surface of Mars. Naturally, I was tremendously excited. I had looked forward to a possible trip to the Red Planet ever since our first visit to Venus on the X-12. Now here was I standing on the surface of this mystery. "What next?" I asked myself. As Frank opened the door, he told me to go ahead, Arthur, step out. "You have the honor of being the first Earthman, since Adam left here, to walk on Mars." "But," I asked, "will I be able to breathe? What kind of air is it?" I soon found out. Yes, it was good air, better than on Earth. Here so far there was no smell of smoke. Yes, it was clean, fresh air. I felt no discomfort. Frank and Francis followed closely behind me, and we walked towards a large group of rocks. But what rocks? Some of them were about 45 feet in diameter, and thousands of them covered that which appeared to be, otherwise, a large field. And in the far distance were a range of hills. We walked up to the nearest large rock, which appeared to be almost jet black. Frank scraped away a layer of soft earth, and by so doing, disclosed something bright. "What is it?" I asked. "Looks like gold," replied Frank.
"Gold," I exclaimed.
"Yes," said Frank, "it is pure gold, but to be sure, let us test it, shall we?" Of course I agreed, so we returned to the X-12 and obtained a test outfit, something like the Tesla bridge, with which we soon proved the rock to be pure gold. We then made a test of all the nearby rocks, and to our surprise and delight, all of the rocks in the field were indeed solid gold. "Well," I remarked, "if we could bring that one big rock to Earth, we would be the richest people on our world." "There is more gold in that one rock," pointing to the 45-foot-high monster,
than an A11 of our world. Okay, said Frank with a grin, so you wish to bring this rock to Earth?
Yes, I replied, if it could be done, but as you know, it is not possible.
I do not know any such thing, answered Frank. It is not only possible to transport all of this gold to Earth, but I will prove it to you.
Well, Frank, I said, I have every reason to believe you. But it is beyond my understanding, at the moment, just how you can do this.
That is to move this heavy mass, which must weigh many times more than your Great X-12. I cannot imagine how you can even place it into your ship.
How long it will require to break it into pieces small enough to lift into your ship, even if you do lift them with a hoist through the hatch.
Frank laughed. No, my dear Arthur, we will not move one piece either by hand or with our hoist. We shall first return to Earth, and then, if you still desire to be the richest man on Earth, we will bring it right into your field, without lifting one ounce. In the meantime, let us have a look around this planet. I was amazed at what Frank had told me, but knowing of the many wonders which I had already seen, not only on this great spaceship, but also on Venus, I knew that anything Frank said was possible. So, I agreed that we should take a look around this planet, which I, at least, knew nothing about, except the little information from our Earth scientists, which they thought they saw by means of a very distant view, through a system of lens. Because of what they thought they saw, we were taught, on Earth, that life as we knew it could not exist on Mars, because, so they said, humans could not breathe the air, and so many other reasons, none of which could be proved. The findings of these Earth scientists was all based on theory, of course, which could never be proved from a distance of millions of miles. Why, they were even mistaken in their findings about the moon, which is only roughly 240,000 miles away. Well, be that as it may, and to prove that the Earth scientists were all wrong, here was I walking on the surface of Mars, without any special equipment, breathing the air, and so far, meeting no monsters. The place at which the X-12 had landed was almost level, except for these large rocks and the distant hills, which looked exactly the same as the hills we see around Canada. The nearby ground was covered with a deep green moss, which was very pretty. Here and there were bushes, and a few large trees, which appeared to be some type of oak. It was a clear day. This early morning, a few birds appeared, small and very pretty blue birds. They were not at all shy, and came close to us as we walked towards the hills. Will we meet any of those people we read so much about? I asked. Mechanical men, with queer long legs. Frank laughed. Yes, those queer ideas were invented by Earth persons who do not believe in the Bible's story of creation. Otherwise, if they used their heads and believed, they would not think of such nonsense. Far as you know, God made mankind in his likeness. Surely, Frank went on to say, there can be but one likeness of God. Therefore, if there are beings on this planet Mars, and other planets, they will be like you and me, naturally of many sizes and many colors. But of course, we people of Venus have been on Mars many times in the past, therefore we know there are real people of flesh and blood on this world, and I feel sure we shall meet some very soon, not far from those hills which we see in the distance.
Are they friendly?
I asked.
Yes, said Frank, as friendly as you are. Love reflects love, on Mars as anywhere else. We had been getting nearer to the hills as we walked along, and soon approached another group of large rocks which looked very much the same as the gold ones, and there we saw in the distance that which appeared to be a town. Sure enough, as we got nearer we could make out buildings. These were not like those on Venus, but appeared to be more like our buildings on Earth, all shapes and sizes, but no roads until we came almost within this town, which was now about 1 mile away. I asked Frank about the roads.
The people here, he said, have no use for roads, which as you know are a great danger on your Earth. You will find good roads within the towns, but as you will see in a moment, they have no need for any roads between towns. Then I noticed that which appeared to be a car coming towards us. As it came near, I saw there were six persons in it. The car appeared to glide a few inches above the ground, it had no wheels. As the car came within reach, I noted the persons in it were all dressed in silk, looking clothes. I could not tell if they were men or women, none of the six had any form of head covering. The car came up to us and the six persons got out and walked up to us, each of them with a bright smile. They all held up their hands with the palms outward, and sent us a mental message of welcome. Welcome to Frank and Francis of Venus, and to you stranger, Frank quickly made us acquainted. This is our friend Arthur, he said, from the planet Earth. Arthur is interested in the field of black rocks, and would like to know if he may take some of them to Earth. The six burst out laughing. Surely, the mental message came, Earthman Arthur is welcome to all those black rocks. Thank you, kind friends, said Frank, on behalf of our friend Arthur. The six Martians then invited us into their car. We all got in and drove towards the town. The car rode perfectly smoothly without any noise, it appeared to glide over the ground. In a few moments, we were in the town, which Frank said was named the City of Light. Our car came to a stop, and we all got out. Frank said, everyone walks in the city. The roads were simply beautiful. The six Martians led us into a chorus hall, where I was told the people remain for hours, even days and weeks in these halls, which fill the city, listening in a sort of stupor or trance to beautiful music, for music is the one great recreation of the Martians. It would appear that gradually, under the influence of this musical version, a mentality seems developed, and the soul moves out of the concourse of listening souls, moved by a desire to do something, into the streets of the city. The Martians call this the act impulse. From that time on the soul rushes, as it were, to its natural occupation. Its mentality, aroused by music, becomes full of some sort of aptitude, and it enters the avenues of its harmonious activity as easily, as quickly, as justly as the growing flower turns toward the sun wherever it may be. Let me present to you the curious scene my eyes saw as we sat in the great chorus hall. I say my eyes. It is hard perhaps for you to realize what an organ can be in a creature, so apparently, as we are, little more than gaseous condensations. You have seen faces and forms in clouds. How often have we watched their changing? It is the same way with Martian music. I seemed to be in a great alabaster cage, enormously large and very beautiful. Its shining walls rose from the ground and at a great height arched together. The front was a network of sculpture, it held the rising rows of what seemed like ivory chairs on which the motionless white and radiant assemblage were seated. The whole place blazed, and this glow prevails throughout the City of Light. The music came from a wonderful array of beings seated all around the great hall. I could almost see the music, as if it was truly formed like clouds. After remaining a long time in the chorus hall, Frank said that due to our limited time, we had best move on, so we left the solemn, swaying music and stepped out upon the broad steps which face the city. We stood amid a colonnade of arches, the white shining columns rose around us to the high shining roof, before us a long descent of steps, and beyond us and around on a softly swelling eminence was spread the City of Light. It was a marvelous picture. The City of Light is simple and monotonous in architecture, but its composition and its radiance quite surpass any earthly conception. The buildings are all domed and stand in squares which are filled with fruit trees, low bush-like spreading plants, bearing white pendant lily-like flowers or pink button-shaped florets like almonds. Each building is square, with a portico of columns placed on rising steps. A pair of columns to each step. Vines wind around the columns, cross from one line of columns to another and form above a tracery of green fronds bearing red flowers, a sort of trumpet honeysuckle. The walls of the buildings are pierced on all sides with broad windows, filled it seemed, with an opalescent glass. Avenues opened in all directions, lined on both sides with these wonderful houses, which appear to be made of a peculiar stone, veined intermittently with yellow, which has the property of absorbing and emitting light. Another strange feature in these Martian houses was the hollow sphere of glass upheld above each house.